are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
I've been really excited in anticipation of talking to you.
Well, thank you.
Because of the, when I came into this industry, my first trip down to LA after being 8 years, I've owned personal training studios. And when I saw your interview about what's going on in the industry, I just wanted to talk to you even more because of the insight that you had. And when I was in the industry at this point, before I went down to Santa Monica, I live about 200 miles away in Visalia, California, in the Central Valley. You know where that is? Yeah. And when I went down there, a real quick story, I didn't know where I was going. No navigation at that time. I stopped in Santa Monica, just there off Pico Boulevard. There was a little gym there. And I was looking for Gold's Gym. I wanted to see the Mecca because I was in this for about 6 or 7 years. I wanted to see the big boys. I stopped in there, and I went inside that gym. It was upstairs. And I asked the person, I said, hey, do you happen to know where Gold's Gym is? And this person, it was a man, and he was very ornery and cantankerous and kind of mean to me. And he said, I don't know where in the hell that place is. And I thought to myself, wow, that's kind of weird. I would think that everybody knows where Gold's Gym is. Anyway, so I drive around. I finally found it after I asked somebody else at Gold's Gym. Come to find out, and I think you probably know who this was. The person that told me that was Joe Gold himself.
Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
He seemed kind of mad. I don't know if he's just cantankerous, but that was my first experience.
No, I think he went to his grave regretting ever having sold his name.
And I was going to ask you about that, you know, because I never really knew the story. And this is exactly why I wanted you here today. So welcome to Serious Growth Podcast, and hopefully we'll have some truth be told today. So I'm really happy to meet you, Ed. So tell me again, are you an architect by trade?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so what made you decide that you wanted to get into the gym business?
It was just a fluke investment I made.
And oh, okay.
I bought Gold's Gym with Pete Grumkowski and eventually Tim Kimber in 1979. I continued working as an architect until 1985. So for 6 years, I was both one of the owners of Gold's Gym and an architect practicing in L.A.
Yeah.
I really wasn't. I had invested some money to buy 25% interest, but I don't think I initially thought that I would be working in the gym business.
Yeah. So what made you as an architect, why the investment in Gold's? Was it at that point, did they need an infusion of cash or something? Or what was it that, why did you invest in it? Is there a reason?
Well, I knew Pete Grumkowski well. And I thought I was going to be one of quite a few shareholders, but it turned out to only be three people.
Okay.
So that sort of changed there too. I mean, it was an opportunity I saw, and you know, I was fascinated with the business. I had joined a gym at when I was at UC Berkeley to lose weight. I knew I was going to be drafted for the Army. This is for Vietnam.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty disgusted with what I saw. I think in the back of my mind, I thought, well, if I ever have a chance to change this, I will. Yeah. And we did. You know, we changed the business dramatically.
To say the least. So when you were now that first gym that that Joe Gold has, was that the gym? Where was that gym located? In Santa Monica?
No, it was in Venice at 1006 Pacific Avenue.
Okay.
That was the one that Joe Gold opened up in 1965.
Okay.
And then he only owned it for 5 years, and it was sold to someone who sold it to someone who sold it to Ken Sprague, and Ken Sprague sold it to us. But Ken Sprague had moved it down onto 2nd Street in Santa Monica.
I wonder if that's where, it wasn't. So then Joe obviously had another gym that was down towards, like when I came in, it was like off Lincoln or Pico or something, down there. Well,
he started a World Gym a few years later.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah, but that was on Main Street.
Right, okay, that must have been it right there.
Right.
You know? Okay, so when you then got into it, now, Pete Grumkowski, was he a member of the gym? How did you and him connect? And I know you connected with Sprague, was it?
Kinsprig, right?
Kinsprig.
Well, when I got laid off as an architect in 1975 in New York City.
Okay.
And I went around the country for interviews. One of them was in Orlando to work on Epcot for Disney. And when I was in Orlando, I went over to Orange Avenue Gym to see a friend of mine who I knew was working out there. And that's where I met Pete Grimkowski. And I said, my God, you know, you'd be the biggest guy ever in Gold's Gym in Venice. I had just come from an interview in L.A. And he said, oh, I'd love to get out there, but there's no way. I'm going through divorce. I don't even have a car. And I said, well, if I take that job, I'll fly you out. You can stay with me and go for Weider's Mr. World. And, you know, we'll see what happens. The humidity in Florida reminded me so much of Vietnam. I didn't take the job with Disney. I took a job in L.A. instead. And so I sent Pete a one-way ticket. He stayed with me for a few months, went on to win the Mr. World. And 4 years later, he called me up and said, you know, Gold's Gym is for sale. Are you interested in buying in? And I said, sure, why not? I had saved 15 grand to buy a new BMW.
You bought a gym instead.
I bought a gym instead.
I see there. Well, you bought the gym for $100,000? Is that what it was?
$50,000 cash and a $50,000 note.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. When you think about that, then years later, how much it was worth. I mean, $100,000. I mean, that's a lot of money back then as well, you know, so $15,000. And that's where you started right there. So I'm assuming that obviously you use Pete Grimkowski. I mean, the guy had a great body and he was kind of he would be like the face of Gold's Gym at that point. Is that correct?
Right. He was Mr. World. He was traveling the world. He was, he had a supplement line. Then he came up with the idea that basically, you know, he saw how many people wanted to make it to Venice to go to the Mecca.
Yeah.
And, but not everybody could. So he thought, well, why don't we bring the Mecca to the people by starting a gym franchise, or at the time it was called licensing.
Yeah.
So, ironically, I knew some people in San Francisco, who had a gym they called Diamond Gym. They said, well, the next best thing to Gold's is Diamond. So we'll call it Diamond, but they weren't doing that well. And, so I bought it with my father in 1980, 40 years ago, this next month. And we made it the first Gold Gym franchise.
I'll be darned. Yeah. And then, of course, the rest is kind of history, isn't it? Ended up opening, what, 704?
Well, when I exited with Pete and Tim and Brockway Moran in 2004, there were 704 locations.
704 locations. So why is it that you, at that point in 2004, why did you decide to get out of it?
Well, we sold it first time in 1999 to Brockway Moran, a private equity group out of Florida. We'd always wanted to be the biggest gym chain in the world. And in 1994, 24 Hour Fitness and Town Sports International started buying up our more successful operators. You know, it's cheaper or better to buy an existing operation than start a gym from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fast food. You have to build memberships. It takes a while to get 1,000 your break even point.
Yeah. So, as far as your business model at that point, like when you started, because I know that Gold's Gym down in Venice is what, 30,000 feet?
26,000.
26,000 feet. Yeah. I'm still a member there, by the way. But what was the business model like at that point? As far as, did you have like a certain square footage that you wanted to open? Did you have, and were you in a certain spot as far as demographics? How did that work out?
Well, that's a very interesting question. You know, being an architect, I focused a lot on square footage. When we bought Gold's Gym in 1980 or 1979, it was only 4,400 square feet. And when we moved it back to Venice in 1981, it was 6,600 square feet. It was the first bay of a 4-bay warehouse. Over time, as the fitness industry evolved, we evolved. We were able to grow. I mean, the biggest luck that the three of us had was buying or moving into a warehouse that had 4 bays, of which all became available over time, because we added things like cardio. There were no bikes in the gym in 1980. We added cardio. We added group exercise. Jane Fonda was starting out back then, and she had aerobic studios, and ultimately that became too pricey a real estate for her. And we moved, we had Group X, you know, aerobics in the gym. And then we eventually had, you know, an entire room devoted to cardio equipment.
Yeah. Now, back then when you were, like, when Kowski, did you guys want the big boys to come in and train at your gym? Or was there, I know it seems like any one of these days, times have really changed since back then. And I know I've had podcasts with Tony Pearson and some of these guys. And, you know, the environment, I even experienced this too, because I did a photo shoot down there in 1980 because I had written books and whatnot. And when I go back now, the environment's much different than it was in the 80s. And it seems like there's more, I don't know, people didn't, now, this is my perspective. It seems like the people are, or they're not as, I don't know, they don't want to share as much as they used to. The camaraderie is different. That's what I've noticed. How was it like that in, when you first started? And did you welcome big time bodybuilders to come in?
We welcomed everyone. I mean, our motto was serious fitness for everybody. And, you know, we gave professional bodybuilders and people with the potential, movie star, people in the entertainment industry, you know, sports figures, we gave them all free memberships. Pete, Tim, and I had to give that information to our outside accountant. He wanted to quantify how much we were giving away in free clothing or memberships. It averaged probably $65,000 a month. So
is that right? Oh my goodness!
But that was you know, if you could get Eddie Murphy to wear a Gold's Gym jacket during MTV Awards for 3 or 4 hours, it was certainly worth it. And we didn't want people like that paying. But it was all those celebrities and the bodybuilders that gave the gym its publicity. It made it famous.
You know, the thing that's hard for some people to realize, and you guys were like way ahead of your time, I think, was that some people have a hard time. I have personal training studios, and I still have one that I still go to. And one of the things I got comfortable with is giving things away, because I could get that on the back end. And that's, but there's so many people that are not willing to do that. And, you know, and so you had a lot of vision and foresight at that point, I think, because obviously it worked out for you.
I would call it ultimate grassroots marketing, but you've seen the gym. We had the Gold's Gym name and logo painted over the mirrors, you know, continuous stripes. So no matter where you photographed in the gym, you saw our name.
Yeah.
And back in those days, a full page ad in one of Weider's magazines could cost $35,000 for a one-time month ad. And but we would allow all the photographers free reign of the gym. We wouldn't charge them, and they would be, you know, sometimes you'd walk in the gym, it would be like a three-ring circus. There would be a photo shoot going on in three of the four bays.
Yeah.
And it was all that free publicity. I mean, it was the social media of the time.
Right.
You could pick up a Muscle Fitness or Flex magazine and page through it, and you might see a couple dozen pages with Gold's Gym in the background or athletes wearing our clothing.
Yeah.
And so it was that subliminal advertising that was so effective. Ironically, when after we sold in 2004, the first call I get was from a photographer who said, "Ed, you know, they want us to pay. Can you help us? Can you help me?" And incredibly enough, they wanted the photographer to pay $350 to shoot in the gym.
Really?
So that publicity we got was, we even gave Chris Lund, Weider's main photographer for a lot of that time, a studio in the gym, a dark room. So it was all those people that helped make Gold's famous and the Mecca.
Did you get much pushback from the bean counters at that point? Like when you're telling your accountant or whoever that you're spending $65,000, you said a month on free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they must've been having a nervous breakdown.
Not really at all. No, it was, I think they understood it was our advertising budget.
Yeah.
We didn't spend that much. I mean, obviously with 700 plus gyms worldwide, they were spending a lot of money advertising and getting the name out there, but we corporately were not spending a lot.
Yeah.
Our biggest marketing expense for the franchise was our annual convention in Las Vegas.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product. Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Was Artie Zeller doing the photography at that point with
he was sort of I would call him semi-retired, but he would go back and forth between World Gym and our gym.
Oh, okay.
Like Arnold, he was very loyal to, you know, Joe Gold. They went back further in time.
Yeah.
And he had an incredible collection of Arnold photographs, which Arnold eventually bought. But no, he was an amazing individual. He had a lot of history and really nice guy.
He really was. In fact, when I did my photo shoot down there with Tom Platz. I know you know him. Yep. And Artie was the photographer. Yeah, nice guy. And he did a great job. And
he was passionate about it. And I never had really favorites with the photographers because they were each so different.
Yeah. Yeah, their own style.
Right. And that made it easy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have to tell you, I when I went to Gold's Gym, the first time I stepped in there, I wanted to now be a bodybuilder, and I was in it for, you know, a few years. I have to tell you something, but when I walked into Gold's Gym the first time, Ed, and I looked at those big guys in there, my first response was, oh, there's no way I could get myself to look like that. You know, it was just mind-blowing to be in that place. And I'm sure lots of people had that. I mean, it was fantastic.
Right.
To be in there. It just really was. I mean, I would imagine there are people who just came in just to see the show, you know, maybe not even work out that hard.
Well, actually, I think a lot of them were motivated to work out even harder. I've talked to quite a few people who said that when they walked into the lobby and they really weren't that excited about working out, but the energy was so great that they caught the bug and were thrilled to have a great workout.
You know, once the shock wore off me, you know, because I stayed there, I worked out, but I was just in awe there for a bit. And after I got over that little negative little spot right there, I said, no, I can do this. And the exact same the thing that you're talking about is exactly what happened to me. When I came back home to the Central California, back into my little studio, I had a brand new inspiration to see if I could get back and get up to that level, which I ended up doing. But one of my proudest moments, and I competed all over the world, but one of my proudest moments was doing that photo shoot inside mm-hmm. Gold's Gym with Artie Zeller and Tom Platz, mm-hmm. because I actually felt like I belonged there. And mm-hmm. that meant more to me than any competition that I ended up doing. Funny.
Well, I've always told the guys it's more important to get photographed than necessarily how you place. You've got to get, you know, publicity.
Yeah, and that certainly gave me a lot of publicity. There's no doubt about that. Okay, so at this point now, then you buy Gold's Gym, and then you got out of it, and you bought it again in 2004?
Well, no, we sold the first time in 1999, and then we exited with the private equity firm in 2004.
And that's where you had all the clubs all built up, is that right?
Right.
And then so you've been out of it ever since then?
Essentially, yes. I've had my own gyms that I was involved with. I was involved in 37 franchises as a shareholder.
Okay.
And six of those were in the Midwest where I'm from. I'm from Omaha. And unfortunately, I had to change the name or drop the name because the new owners raised the franchise fees to 7% of gross revenue, which is, you know, too high.
Yeah.
And that's what's, you know, killing all the franchises, I think. It's basically what fast food charges, but, you know, we're not fast food. We the name is great, but we don't do all that McDonald's say does for their franchises.
So what do you think now, especially now with you're kind of leading into what I want to talk about, is the big box gyms. I mean, one of the things that stirred me away from being in the big gyms was the, I didn't think that I'd be able to sleep very well at night having all this square footage. And of course you have to be in a market to where you have enough universe to market to, but I don't know how some of these places make it, like around here, like the Planet Fitnesses of the world and places like that. I mean, where I live, I don't know how they make it, to be honest with you. Especially now, you can get into some of these places for like $10 a month. How the hell can you make that, Ed?
You can't now. I don't think in my interviews that you maybe have seen lately, after Gold's Gym declared bankruptcy 3 weeks ago, I think because of the pandemic, it's going to be a whole new ballgame, and you're not going to be able to charge $19 a month and survive, because you've got to have all these new features to survive in this new era.
Yeah.
You know, maybe have an employee checking someone's temperature as they come in and getting them to, wash their hands before or after they work out, or wear gloves, or who knows. But, and then you've got the additional problem of the social distancing in the gym.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how a boutique gym, which only offers one thing like spinning, can make it.
Exactly.
And I think the gyms that are going to do well, at least initially, will be the private training studios that are between 2,000 and 6,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Because if you have fewer members, you can stagger them. You can have start times. You can clean more easily. So it's a whole new ball game. But what changed over the years was the percentage that the rent was of gross revenue. When I was first got in it, it was probably around 12%, and then it's gotten up to now where in some areas it's over 40% of your gross revenue.
Wow, and that's a lot.
You can't make it work. So. Again, this is what we're going through right now is a game changer, and it's going to reset everything. Yeah. So,
I did watch your interview, and one of the things I think you said in the interview was that as far as Gold's Gym is concerned, listen, Gold's had probably the biggest brand awareness out there, as far as I'm concerned. There's a few of them that's out there, but I think Gold's was number one. But did the I'm going to use another example, like in baseball, for example. You know, when the suits came in and started running Major League Baseball, it kind of ruined the sport a little bit, because it wasn't the guys on the inside. It wasn't baseball guys. Right. Now, did something like that happen, like in Gold's Gym? So I think you talked in the interview that you wanted the bodybuilders and the guys to be there, to be the sort of the face of that, and the feel of that gym. At some point, did it get to the point where you had people that were, let's call them the suits, that kind of took over, and did it change that atmosphere?
Well, I think that's a big problem with the Gold's management that took over. I think they've been through 8 CEOs in 16 years, and none of them, only one came from a gym background. He was out early. All the rest were Harvard and Stanford MBAs that had no passion for the fitness industry. They didn't really, I don't think, understand it. And I think even regardless of who you talk to, most people don't have the history. They haven't bothered to understand the history of the fitness industry. And, it's changed enormously. Change is the one constant.
Yeah.
People can't imagine, 50 years ago, Arnold Schwarzenegger had to go from Graz, Austria to Venice, California to get a workout. Now, any major city in America, you can go a mile and find a dozen choices. You could before the pandemic.
Yeah.
So, it's totally changed, and you just can't have this one model that works forever.
Yeah. So if you were to come back in, I mean, I think you're telling me, and I think, sometimes, you'd rather be lucky than good. And I can say that in my case, because, I've been around I've had personal training studios for 38 years, and I've opened a bunch of them. I actually opened one. I think you had you took over one, you said, in San Francisco. I opened one in Pacific Palisades. Mm-hmm. I took over a gym over there and made it a personal training studio. But, my business model actually ended up being something that saved me through the years, because you know right. as well as I did, the longer you're in any kind of industry, you're going to have downturns, and there's going to be things that happen. And one of the things my dad taught me a long time ago, he said, if you keep your overhead down, you have a fighting chance. Mm-hmm. And I never forgot that.
Right.
And, so I guess, through this pandemic, one of the things I was really fortunate about, Ed, was because I'm that size. My space that I'm in here right now is 2,600 feet. It was funny that you said that you think that's probably the next coming way that people will operate. And, you know, and because of the fact that it's by appointment only, I was able to follow the guidelines. Mm-hmm. And you know what, Ed, I never had to shut my doors down, not 1 minute. I kept them open. And it wasn't because they didn't try to, you know, intimidate me a little bit, because the police came by and they had me categorized as a gym. Mm-hmm. And of course I, you know, let them know why I really wasn't. It was a studio, you know, so I was really lucky that way. And 50%, look, I took a hit like everybody else did, but I can operate at 50% and still make money here because we can lean way down. And that's, I think that's kind of what you're saying now, right?
Right. No, it's true. It's, and I would also suggest you try and renegotiate your rent right now.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. No, I know that. And didn't you say in that interview that that was kind of part of the strategy, as well as some of these places were struggling? It was also another way to drop your overhead, right? Because you're renegotiating your lease.
When you go into bankruptcy, you can basically negate your leases of your corporation, and it's a good time to renegotiate your leases with the landlords.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's why they did it, but it's not a good thing in our industry to be in bankruptcy, because the consumer doesn't understand and thinks you're right. Going to close. So how do you sell a 1 year membership to someone who knows you're in bankruptcy? So
exactly,
it's not good. But no, what you've done, I mean, again, that's a model that still works.
Yep, it sure does. I mean, it stood the test of time for me, you know.
I think I sent you my new gym prototype, which is, you know, 6 to 10,000 square feet, which I think can work in this, you know, post-pandemic era.
Yeah.
Because of the square footage and the ease of sanitizing and achieving social distancing. So, no, it's we're going to see a whole new fitness environment.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that, again, 8 years ago, which shocked me, because I've been in this business for a long time. I'm an athlete, but 8 years ago, I had three strokes that paralyzed me unbelievably. Mm. And so long story short, I recovered. But one of the things I added to my facility here is I started doing stroke rehab. Yeah. And that made me essential actually right away. I was considered an essential business, right. You know, which is even, you know, it just kind of just gave me a little more fodder, if you will. And for the reasons why I should still stay open. But let me ask you this. For these guys, I just got off an interview with one of the guys that owns these big box gyms in New Jersey. And, of course, they're in New York. They're all shut down. These guys are really, really, really in bad way there. So going forward, Ed, how would you take if you're that box gym that can somehow manage to stand, but you need to diversify your income, do you think that it would be smart to take a portion? Let's just say you had 6,000 feet. Do you think it would be a wise move to take maybe 3,000 feet of that and make a whole different building inside the bigger gym? And do you think it would be smart to do all personal training in that space and still have people that come into the other part of the gym that just pay an open gym membership? Do you think that would be wise?
I think it might work. That's essentially what Gold Gym Corporate was doing here in Texas, where I am right now, with a lot of their clubs. They were doing what they call a Gold Studio, which was a gym within a gym.
Yeah.
And their gyms were very large, like 35,000 square feet typically. So I would insert my model of 10,000 feet inside this gym, because they already have done something very similar, except their model wasn't as virtual. So that's, I think, something like what you're offering too, it would be a great way to, again, create essentially a gym or a physical therapy unit with inside the club. Yes.
Yeah. That would at least give you a fighting chance, perhaps. I mean, something like this.
These big box gyms are too big for today's market. The demographics don't work. The people that made Gold's Gym famous, or the Mecca back in the 80s and early 90s, they don't exist in numbers anymore.
Yeah,
millennials are not like that. I think they respect people like you more. You're not, you know, back in your heyday, you might have been considered more of a freak, you know, next to Tom Platz there.
Right.
But now you're a guru. Now you're a healer.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I can say, yeah, and that's how I can stay relevant, you know, moving forward like that, you know.
Well, I think these big box gyms are going to have to do something to kind of reinvent themselves.
Well, and how do you really think? I mean, aside from doing this that we're talking about, do you? And if you were to look into that abyss, how many gyms do you think are going to go out of business because of what's going on today? If you had to guess.
Well, I said in my interview 10,000. I would hold to that number from what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, and then with you moving forward, let's just say that with your prototype now, how does that actually look? Do you actually yourself go in and you lay this whole thing out, and then are you looking for people then to franchise and buy into this like you did with the Gold's Gym franchise, or how's that going to look?
Well, I'm looking right now for. I was trying to work with WeWork last year. The shared office entity. You know, what I learned is that, of course, they cater mainly to millennials, but they had over 400 locations worldwide, you know, with very large office areas, and they were interested in starting a new gym chain. They had the vision, but they didn't have the corporate culture to do it. And I think if I were to work with one of these shared office providers, we could do my model all over the country, all over the world, and it would only take 10,000 feet. They're losing a lot of tenants right now who are going bankrupt because of the pandemic. Yeah. So they've got extra space, and that's a great amenity to offer someone. If you're cooped up in an office all day working, I don't know, 100-hour weeks, what better relief than to go to a gym in-house and get a workout and shower and just refresh? So, I would, of course, be neat to own as many as possible, but I also think, you know, we're in the service business, so I would also encourage franchising.
Yeah. So here's what I've learned being in my in the personal training studio, because what I've done over the years since the 80s, I've put people into this kind of a business. You know, I didn't know much about licensing and or franchising. I just made it up. I said, look, if you want a place like mine, I know how to set them up. I did it as a turnkey operation, and I still do. Yeah. In 90 days, I can have you up, and it's a turnkey operation. Right. But that being said, I think that do you think a little more expertise to actually set one of these things up? Because not just anybody, I would think that it would be easier to open up an open gym where everybody comes in for X amount of dollars a month. I would think it'd be easier to operate something like that than a personal training studio, because you have to have trainers that know what the heck they're talking about.
Right.
How do you feel about that? Because I'm wondering how are you going to do that if you don't have the right people in there to begin with, because they're going to fail.
Right. Well, again, my model depends entirely on virtual trainers. So you would have the talent on the screen, either live, remote, or a tape, a video. Okay. And my goal would be to ultimately almost create the version of a holodeck room from Star Trek, where you walk in the room and you're transported to another world with a trainer on the screen, and you go through your 20, 25 minute workout for cardio, for strength, for yoga, for stretching, whatever. But yeah, your model depends more on somebody who knows what they're doing and is passionate about it.
Yeah. Kind of like with the old days when the guys were opening gyms were guys that were actually in the industry. Yeah. Same way. Well, let me ask you this then, because what you're talking about seems to me like I'm watching some of these. I mean, technology is fantastic and the stuff that they can do now on screen. And I like when they're advertising some of these bikes that you're actually interacting with the trainer on screen. That's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Right. In other words, yeah, and a lot of it's brand new. There's an Israeli company called Spivey that, basically you get to pick your own avatar, and it gamifies the whole thing. So you're sitting on your bike and you're racing against the other 29 people in the room, or you can at least see where you are on the screen. You're going through some sort of, you know, study, maybe the Tour de France or whatever.
Yeah.
And so millennials like the whole video game world, and that gamifies it. And again, there's no live instructor, so it's very affordable, and you make it fun. You know, everyone can ride a bike, right? Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, here's, you know, I'm an old school guy, so I'm asking you that question, you know, from this position. I know how hard it is to keep people accountable to their program. You know, if you take a look at the statistics and people that sign up at these open gyms, it's about 28 and a half days before they transition out. You know, just kind of this kind of the normal ebb and flow of that particular setting. That's something I learned over the years. And I actually set my places up over the years next to, if I can, big box gyms, because I know those people are going to transition out and they're going to want to try something different.
Right.
But with that being said, I still also realize how hard it is to keep those people accountable. Mm-hmm. And my question then would be, and I don't know if you've done studies or demographics on this, I don't know how these online trainers that are doing it kind of virtual, like what you're talking about, I don't know how they can keep their people accountable for any long term. Because it's hard enough to keep them accountable when you actually are saying, look, show up at the gym, you know, show up at my studio because I'm here waiting for you. I mean,
well, you know what I mean? The personal training online is a mystery to me, but it's working for a lot of people.
I know. I mean, if you believe what they're saying, I don't get it. You know, I dabble in.
I guess I'm old fashioned that way. I don't get it. But the beauty of my model would be that you could have accountability because the technology exists. That when a person books their time to use a strength machine or the bike or the yoga mat, it's all recorded. So that can go to their employer or to their health insurance.
Ah, interesting. No, I like that.
I don't know if you know, it's very automated, right? I mean, that technology didn't exist. I mean,
yeah.
Go back 40 years where I was using a Rolodex card to check members in. They had signed or printed their name on a Rolodex card and gave their number. My employee looked at it to see if they were who they said they were, and then looked them in the gym. I went through eye readers, fingerprint readers, you name it, barcodes. But now it exists where that member can book their appointment and be reported back to their employer or insurance company. So I think that's going to be a game changer, because after this pandemic, people, you know, your health is going to be more important than ever.
Yeah.
And I go back 40 years and I opened my first gym, you know, in San Francisco, ironically, at the beginning of AIDS, HIV AIDS.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a couple of my former employees and they reminded me about all the cleaning they had to do. You know, people thought you could get AIDS by sitting on a bike seat that someone had used.
Right.
And there were all these myths and 32 million people have died from AIDS, but it didn't kill the gym business.
Interesting, huh?
And only 300,000 people have died from this pandemic. So, I mean, by comparison, you know, this is nothing. But
right.
I think fitness is going to be more important than ever.
Yeah. No, I like that. One of the things that I would ask you, and maybe this can all be built in because of what you said, there's so much technology. One of the things that I focus on when I'm training clientele, whether it be online or in the studio, as I set them up on and manipulate the components that are responsible for creating whatever kind of result that they want, whether it be for fitness, or athlete. And how does that look when somebody comes to sign up to get those components? The three components that I focus on are resistance training, so mm-hmm. weight training,
right.
cardiovascular conditioning, and nutrition. Those are the three main ones.
Right.
So I'm assuming that you can, in this whatever technology that there's out there, you can build all that in, and they have to stay. In other words, before you get like checked off for the insurance company, you've got to do every one of these things for 12 weeks, let's just say, something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah, you would have, I mean, you could theoretically just do cardio for a while, which would be a good way to start. Then you would use a strength machine, which they're being provided by a company called Active out of Santa Monica.
Okay.
They're in their beta testing stage with this machine, which is, it's like the mirror tonal you see for home use. I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Yes, I am, yeah.
And then I would also have someone there to, there are nutrition programs that I would make available to these people.
Yeah.
Because it's at least half food.
Yeah.
You know, so that's important. Yeah. And you'd have to have all three.
Yeah. That's what I would think, you know, and like I said, I'm glad to hear that because people need that. And I've always believed in that because again, you control the factors and you can produce a certain amount of results as long as you're consistent, as long as you can be accountable for that. You know, when I was in a probably, I don't know, maybe 88, something like that, I was really interested in corporate fitness back then. Mm-hmm. And I actually flew to Japan because they were big on that. And one of the things that this kind of speaks to what you're talking about is that if you wanted to work for a company over there, a part of their job description was that you had to work out 3 days a week, because they understood at that point that by doing that, it reduced injuries and all this stuff that reduced stress and all that kind of stuff. And this kind of reminds me of that, but like even more evolved, I guess.
Well, the technology is there to monitor the use of the facility, and that's a game changer, I think.
Yeah, interesting.
You can reduce your insurance rates, or your employer would feel more comfortable. Look at the stats on who's dying with the virus. It's largely people that are overweight. I think the numbers are all over the place. I don't know what quite to believe, but
yeah,
I saw one where 40% of the people that have died in New York area were overweight or obese.
Yeah. I have, in my facility, I have people that are registered nurses and they work at the hospital.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. What they said in every single case where there's been a death, there's been underlying health issues that contributed to that. So, yeah. It's kind of funny, like I'm thinking about when you opened up in San Francisco, overcoming the AIDS, and how you had, what was that like to be able to convince people that, listen, you can't get this? And how did you get their trust? Because some of these gyms are going to have to deal with that. They're not going to be able to do your model, maybe necessarily. They're kind of stuck where they're at. How are they going to possibly get over this hump to be able to get people
I think the gyms are going to have to hire people for cleaning, additional people. And the members are going to have to see the gyms being cleaned while they're there. That's going to be very important, because unfortunately the media has created such hysteria that people are afraid. I can see it in their eyes.
Oh yeah.
So you need to have somebody there, several people, everybody engaged in cleaning.
Funny that you say that, because in here we've always had like these wipes and stations around the gym. And I tell you what, and we've always, people are always seeing the trainers. Mm-hmm. And now that this has happened, I mean, all the clients that are in it with us, I mean, they're engaged in it, and it's actually very good to see. Right. And I think you're right. I think because, fortunately for me, I have had that V bounce back. And I wasn't quite sure, because how could you know after, all this? Because even though I stayed open, I took heat for this, Ed, because, in today's day with social media and everything, I was being socially shamed. Why is this place open? People don't really know the whole story.
Yeah.
And that's just the way humans are sometimes. I knew I was going to take some heat, but the only reason why I stayed open was because I was able to follow the guidelines. And of course, as you know, they kept changing, but I was still able to follow the guidelines. But the one of the things that I reached out and I said, because I got on social media one time, because I had somebody take a photo of my facility, and they said, "Why is this place open?"
Yeah.
And I could understand some people were mad because they had to be closed. All the gyms around me were all closed. I was the only one that's open.
Yeah.
And and one of the things I came out and said in a social media post, and I only did it once, Ed, because I'm old school. I'd rather look at you face to face and find out if you have a problem with me. Right. Well, let's talk about it. Not the social media stuff. Right. And I like social media because I use it, but it has its other side. And I said in my post, I said, "Where would you rather be in a facility that's clean, that's controlled, or would you rather be lining up at this point in front of grocery stores, all bunched up?" And so that's a better place to be. And one of the best things that you can do to build your immune system is to exercise. Is that right?
Right. No, I totally agree. I don't like the way gyms have been handled.
Yeah. It's unreal. Anyway, so what are we moving forward? How long do you think that something like this will take in your from your experience that you think it'll take to get off the ground and to kind of put forward your sort of strategy for the new way to do business?
Well, I'm hoping that my interviews have elicited some interest. So I appreciate that your time. I've gotten some calls from people interested in my project. So we'll see. Even buying Gold's Gym back.
Nice.
So it is, I think it's still the only brand out there right now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's no doubt about it. People know Gold's Gym, and that's for sure.
People like you, you know, are available to run these studios.
Yep.
I mean, that's true. Again, I think you're more respected now than you were when you were first got into it.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, you know. And all I can say is this, you know, one of the things I'm very proud of is that in the 38 years, again, we all go through tough times. It's just going to happen. But you know something, Ed, because of the fact that this thing is about building relationships with people, and as much as it is putting them through the paces of their workout, you have a clientele that becomes loyal to you because I'm loyal to them. And you know what? I'm sure you've heard of the old saying, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours twice as hard. My clientele has done that to me for 38 years. I can count on them. And that was one of the reasons why I stayed open.
I'm not sure exactly what your personal training started at Gold's Gym Venice, but it was definitely early in the 80s.
Yep.
And all those years I was one of the owners, we never had one lawsuit from someone who was being trained by a personal trainer. We had them, initially it was free. You could train your clients in the gym. And then it got to be, before cell phones and whatever, it got to be a hassle taking messages at the front desk. So we decided we had to charge something. So we started with $100 a month rent. And when I left the business in 04, we had about 130 trainers paying, I think, $425 a month each.
Yeah.
To train people in the gym. We were charging them rent. They had to be certified. They had to be insured. Right. They had to know CPR. And we never had a problem with that. So yeah. I think it's a great model, and there is that relationship that's amazing. I mean,
it really is. And you know, something happened to me years ago where it wasn't as bad as this, but that's, like I said, I thought, you know what, I know based on the way that the media is handling this, this is going to be a big, big thing, and it's going to scare the crap out of people, and it certainly has. But you know what? The people that stayed with me, I dropped off 50%, but being this small, you can lean way down. Mm. And that group of people, Ed, stayed with me throughout the whole time. Mm. And you know what? Now that things are kind of opening up again, we bounced right back, and I got lucky once again. Again, I'd rather be lucky than good sometimes, you know, and right. It just happened to work out for me. But Ed, I'm going to tell you something. I mean this sincerely. I'm honored that you came on this show because, you know, Gold's Gym has been a big part of my life. When I was down there with Tom Platz, I mean, I was living the bodybuilding lifestyle dream down there, baby. I was living at that point. Platz, they said that he would, because I wrote these books, these training courses, and I said, Tom, I want you to train me for a show because I can't get any more results. And unbelievably, he took me on under his wing. And I lived there at, Marina Hotel. It's right. Another net. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes,
A couple blocks away from Gold's Gym. Mm-hmm. I lived the bodybuilding lifestyle, and I'm so happy and honored that I met the guy who is responsible for making this thing a big hit in our industry, and you've impacted me. So I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
All right. Hope to see you maybe somewhere down the road. Who knows?
Right.
All right. Thanks again, Ed.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.